Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
Well, after four less than exciting winters, Utah made national news with reports of 2 feet of new snow in 24 hours. That's welcome news to the director of Ski Utah, Nathan Rafferty. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning. So what can you tell us about the reaction nationally? I mean, you heard from folks?
We have, for sure. It just feels really good to be in full swing. And, you know, I can't tell you how needed that great snowstorm was just to recharge everybody's batteries, especially after, you know, a couple lackluster years. And we all remember what it feels like now. But I know I was out in it, and it was great, and just allowed us to, as an organization, to tell everybody, you know, statewide how much we've got open, and things are looking good in Utah.
So everything's open now. I mean, I think Cherry Peak may have been the last one to.
Yep. Cherry Peak opened. In fact, they opened before the storm happened, so they should be in great shape now.
All right. So does Ski Utah do anything differently with its marketing plan, or you just follow, you know, what you had set out?
You know, we've got a plan, but we also react, especially when it comes to snow. So we've got a pretty powerful little media machine that we use, you know, a million different channels, social channels and marketing, and to let people know that we've got that snow. And as we all know in this industry, you know, visitation is really driven by snow. So when we get it, we make a lot of noise.
Yeah, so what changes? Just email blasts and things like that? Or do you...
All the above. You know, our PR department reaches out to the media, and we, you know, our media guys, video and photography teams go into high gear, and we churn out a ton of that. And it's not just deep powder skiing. It's snow plows and snow removal and, you know, you name it, the kind of stuff. And then we reach out to national sources like the Weather Channel and CNN and let everybody know, make sure they have footage from Utah.
Yeah, certainly Tahoe's received lots of snow. So do you kind of pull back the California advertising and then focus back east where they haven't seen so much?
We have. We've done a little of that, moved a little bit around from San Francisco area to New York, where it's been so warm on the west coast, on the east coast, unfortunately. But I think unfortunately for them, it does create an opportunity for us. And so we hope to capitalize on some of those East Coast markets. And we have some big ones back there in Boston and New York.
Yeah. Have you seen any changes, though, in kind of projected, you know, numbers in terms of the rest of the winter?
You know, I haven't seen anything up to date, but I'm sure we have.
All right. So really, but it needs to snow again, right? Otherwise, this all just kind of dwindles away.
You know, Mother Nature can't turn off on early January. We're in a great place. So crossing fingers that we're going to see some continued snow action.
Okay. Just want to report again, the I-80 eastbound exit traffic is backed up to the exit before Kimball Junction. It's really getting bad out there. If there's any way you can avoid the area, we've got a traffic signal that's out, requiring, I guess, a four-way stop there. So try to avoid the area or see if you can go around, if that, in fact, you can do that. I also wanted to ask you about the fact that, and this isn't really news, that Brighton is for sale, but it's still for sale. Are any you hearing any rumblings there about?
Sounds like it. No, it's the, you know, just standard rumor stuff, but it's been publicly known that it's been for sale for a long time as part of a, sounds like a larger package. Whether they would sell it individually, who knows? It, you know, it also has a management contract that comes along with that. So, you know, so it's owned by CNL but managed by Boyne. And I think that makes things just a little bit more complicated, but it's an awesome property. And, you know, a few minutes from Salt Lake City, and they do great business, and right out Park City's back door.
Yeah, so when you say a management contract, that means what?
So it means there's a real estate investment trust, CNL, that owns the resort, but Boyne Resorts, who they manage, much like hotel companies, will manage a hotel property that's owned by somebody else.
So it's not like Deer Valley could come in and then they're not selling that. They want it to be part of the Boyne family.
You know, I don't know the particulars, but in general, I think that means that you would either need to hold true to that management contract or buy it out. But I, but again, I'm not an expert in that, and I don't know the particulars.
Well, on December 18th, Park City Mountain Resort connected with Canyons Resort, creating the largest ski resort in the country. That was, what, the first of three more steps to connect the Wasatch?
Right. First of, well, really two big steps. So the connection between Park City and Canyons was one, and we thank them very much for that. You know, the One Wasatch concept is a long-term goal, but it's something that we, as a resort industry, are really excited about and continue to work towards. The next two big steps are connecting between Park City and Big Cottonwood Canyon, and then between Big Cottonwood and Little Cottonwood Canyon. And when you look at a map from above, you see how really, really close they are. You could do it a bunch of different ways. The closest and most likely way to do it would be between Park City and a resort like Brighton, and then between a resort between Solitude and Alta are probably the easiest, least invasive, closest, most likely places to connect, and we continue to plug away on those.
So Mountain Accord did not take away this opportunity to do those connections?
No, it didn't, and we continue to work with Mountain Accord. They've taken I don't want to say a step back, but are looking at some more short-term options right now. So really feeling, you know, the feedback is that we've got some issues with traffic, both here in Park City and in the Cottonwood Canyons, and what can we do to address those in the near term? But we're still have our eyes on that long term too, because you can make some short-term solutions, but I don't think our traffic issues are going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah. Right now, though, Mountain Accord's working on creating some kind of recreation conservation area that would protect the tops of these resorts. So when you say that One Wasatch can move forward, how, if all of that's protected land?
Sure. Well, and it's, I'd say it's premature to put any kind of name on that. That was a big debate, and right now it has no name. So there's a land swap that is still in the offering, and there are a lot of details there that can be really advantageous to our resorts for a lot of reasons. Moving some, you know, for them, they'd be giving up a whole lot of land that is up in the mountains where there's backcountry skiing right now, and allow them to get some private land down at the resort bases that would help them with things like parking and some base area development, but keep things, importantly, clustered at the base. But the real hitch with One Wasatch is what's going to happen with Grizzly Gulch. And Alta has always said, we're in this for a connection. We either we can put in a lift and connect to Solitude, and we can do that next summer, or we can work on a bigger, more longer-term transportation solution, a true transportation system that would move people without skis, you know, four seasons, 365 days a year, whether it's a train or gondola, I don't know. But if that doesn't happen, we are still planning to move forward with some kind of connection over the snow. And that is still going to be the least expensive, least invasive option, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, lots of times it works. You just make it expensive. So, I mean, if you charge some kind of toll to drive up Big or Little Cottonwood Canyon, that's going to keep a lot of people out of their cars. No?
Yeah, and everybody's really concerned. You know, we don't want to make it more expensive or more difficult to go into the mountains, whether it's for skiing or hiking or whatever. We don't want to be in a position to tell people no. I think it's working towards a some kind of transportation solution is going to be the best, but it's going to require a really big solution.
Yeah. Have we even seen, though, an increase in buses and things like that happen yet? What do they call it, BRT or something?
Yeah. Nope, not yet, but we're working towards that solution.
All right. And then another connection that we didn't really talk about, that, and that's eventually dropping the rope between Deer Valley and Park City. But given that Deer Valley is one of three resorts countrywide that does not allow snowboarders, is that ever going to happen?
Yeah, you know, that's a Deer Valley decision. Technically, that's a pretty easy connection to make, and I think that one, you know, probably wouldn't even be considered until all the other ones were done, is my guess. But again, that's always going to be a Deer Valley decision.
All right. And of course, a lot of hoopla has been made over the fact that Park City, now the country's largest resort, I guess you can use that to your good marketing purposes, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been on that gondola. It's really fun to be able to see the different ways you can see it. I saw friends on Facebook skiing from using the bus system. Our friend Tom Kelly, actually with the U.S. ski team, I saw he skied from Jordanelle Gondola down through Deer Valley, hopped on the bus, free bus system, over to Park City, and then from the far south side of Park City all the way to the north side. Just, it just really expands the way you can attack your ski day. So really some really fun options.
So was it really skiing or was it just being moved around?
Well, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? And who knows, maybe Tom was tired of skiing all that powder the last couple of weeks and he was looking for a day just to take it easy and move around. But I'll bet you you asked him, he had fun.
At the same time, though, Park City has gotten a lot of flack from locals here, and maybe things will ease up a little bit now that they're not blacked out and they can get back to skiing. But real questions about whether or not, I mean, the resort can operate as such a large resort. I mean, they had a really difficult time opening up terrain when we saw the steepest terrain at Alta and Snowbird open.
Sure. Well, I'd say that's true, but it's also not totally true. I know Alta and Snowbird had some real difficult times getting terrain open with the snowfall. And that snowfall we had was not your average 8 to 10-inch overnight dump. We had a significant amount of snow. So you couple that with the fact of, you know, adding $50 million and making sure the public is safe first and foremost. So, you know, maybe a little growing pains, but I have no reservation at all that those guys are going to make that place sing. And, that's what they do really well is operate a resort. And, you know, they're not going to have any problem with that.
Yeah, and certainly something I'd asked, Bill Rock, CEO of Park City. You know, I mean, Vail Resorts has always prided itself on creating a quality guest experience. But when you have people sitting in lift lines or standing in lift lines 30, 40 minutes, that especially if you've paid more than $100 for a lift pass, that's got to tick a couple people off.
Yeah, well, they do what they do well. And like I said, I think they're top shelf resort operators, and we're going to see a great product out of them.
What are you hearing about just a lack of employees, not just here in Park City, but maybe, you know, Wasatch area?
You know, I haven't heard a ton. I've heard it's been a little bit more of a struggle than past years, but I haven't heard anybody hitting the panic button quite yet. So I think that'll be, we got past this Christmas holiday and tons of snow. And so I think things are going to smooth out a little bit from here on out.
Okay. Anything else?
No, just excited to start 2016 with a ton of snow.
Okay. Nathan Rafferty is the director of Ski Utah. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30.
Hi, this is Stanton Jones from the Silver Mountain Sports Clubs, a KPCW supporter. We all love to do athletic activities outside, but did you know that both men and women need to lift weights at least 2 times every week? Weight training helps you burn fat and decreases the risk of osteoporosis. We have 2 locations in Park City. Be stronger, live healthy, play longer.
KPCW News Time now, 8:30. Good morning. Well, the first 2 months of the flu season have been mild in Utah, but health officials are cautioning that it's likely to get worse over the next 2 months. Utah Department of Health data shows that only 34 people had been hospitalized with the flu from October through December 26. At the same time, late last year, several hundred people had been hospitalized. Utah's slow start mirrors what health officials are seeing around the country. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said this month that only South Carolina is showing significant flu-related traffic at doctors' offices and clinics. Greg Reed, epidemiologist with the Utah Department of Health, said that they are cautiously optimistic but warns that this flu season is likely to peak in February, and that certainly could be maybe January during Sundance Film Festival for us. News Time now, 8:31. KPCW News Time now, 8:32. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me now, Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
Well, let's follow up. Nathan talking about your post, I guess, on Facebook about your epic adventure from Deer Valley to Canyons Village?
Yeah, that was pretty funny yesterday. So a friend of mine's in town. He said, hey, let's get together and we'll ski over at Park City. I said, well, that's really great. And then yesterday morning, I realized that my skis were over at the Jordanelle Gondola at the Valet. So I figured, okay, I got to drive all the way over there. But maybe it would be easier if I just parked there, picked up my skis, and skied down to the base at Snow Park, and then took the interconnect connection between Deer Valley and Park City, known as the City Bus. And I did that, and it was just a great day. I think the totals on that were 24 miles of skiing and bus riding. I think it did 16 runs, 17,000 feet of vertical. It was just an absolute blast. So skied from the Jordanelle Gondola all the way over to Red Pine and all the way back. I had a nice lunch up at Cloud Dine, and it was a wonderful day. And you just started thinking about what an amazing community we live in where we have that sort of resource where we can, you know, if you've got a pass and you can go out there and you can ski a couple of different resorts here and just have a great time. I mean, there's nothing like that in North America.
Yeah. So you had to get back to your vehicle, though, at Jordanelle?
Had to get back to my vehicle. And, you know, the lifts at Deer Valley are open really quite late. I think it's like probably a 4:15 closure on the Mountaineer lift at Deer Crest to get back. So really, that was a lot of time. I started at 10:30 in the morning and I skied right up till 4, and it was just a blast. So folks, if you got passes at both resorts and you want to have a good time and say you did something really cool, go check it out. The bus was awesome too. It's just, you know, literally like a 10-minute ride between the two.
Yeah. Did you go up town lift or did you go all the way to the base?
I went to the base in the morning and then I came back via town lift.
Yeah. Yeah. So you did get to ski. It wasn't just kind of sitting on chairlifts all day.
No, totally. I mean, I got a lot of ski time in. You know, it was just a blast, really a lot of fun. And I was actually skiing at a pretty slow pace with the guy I was with. And it was just a whole lot of fun. Great
right.
resorts here.
Well, let's move on and talk just a little bit about Stein Erickson and the passing of Stein. I know that USSA had put out a statement about his passing.
Yeah, I mean, it's always sad when someone passes, especially someone who has been so notable in skiing as Stein Erickson was. From a competitive point of view, Stein, of course, an Olympic gold medalist and silver medalist from 1952, and also won 3 world championship medals in 1954 in Falun, Sweden. And what's significant about that, and one of the little connection points back to Park City, is that that is the same accomplishment that Ted Ligety achieved in 2013. And one of my great memories of Stein is that welcome home celebration in the plaza at Park City Mountain Resort, where Stein actually, a 3-time world championship gold medalist, welcomed back another one from this community. And what a recognizable idol of sorts and hero he was to athletes like Ted Ligety. So each of us in town have our own Stein Erickson stories. And for all of us at the U.S. Ski Team, it's been amazing to be here in this community as long as we have, and to be able to look up at someone who had such great athletic success as Stein Erickson. And even right to his death, the thing that he loved to talk about more than anything else was ski racing. He was a student of the sport, and he just really relished any opportunity to be with the athletes and to talk ski racing.
We're talking with Tom Kelly from the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. Again, we've got a big traffic jam at the interstate and Kimball Junction. That's due to a light malfunction at Kimball Junction. Latest word I had now is that we've got traffic backed up on I-80 eastbound to the Jeremy Ranch area. So again, you need to either avoid the area. If you're expecting somebody to be there, they're probably stuck in that and maybe several minutes late. Let's get to the Tour de Ski report from the cross country. This is now underway.
Yeah, the Tour de Ski is celebrating its 10th anniversary. For those not familiar with it, this is a remarkable stage race, much like the Tour de France on skis. This year, the Tour is 8 stages over 10 days with races in Switzerland, Germany, and Italy. The USA in the early days of the Tour really didn't participate, didn't have the athletes who really could have credible results in the Tour. That's really changed over the last few years, and the ones who paved the way there really were skiers like Keegan Randall and Liz Steven. This year, the U.S. Ski Team entered 11 athletes, 7 women and 4 men. Among those, Rosie Brennan from Park City, making her Tour de Ski debut. And it's great to see how competitive we are. Right now, after 3 stages in Switzerland, Lenzerheide, Switzerland, the USA with 2 women in the top 10, and four women in the top 30, three in the top 20. Jesse Diggins, eighth, and Sadie Bjornsson, ninth after those three stages. Liz Steven, who's finished as high as fifth in the tour, the best U.S. finish ever, is back in the 20s right now. The schedule this year is not as conducive to Liz's skiing style. I think that will change a little bit as we get through the week, and in particular this Sunday, looking at the climb up Alpe Sermis, an 8 to 9 kilometer hill climb, straight up an alpine mountain resort. Liz has been second in that event, so she always finishes strong in the tour. Tour has a day off today, and then it's in Oberstdorf, Germany for a couple of days, then down to Toblach, Italy, and then wrapping up this week in Val di Fiemme, Italy. You can watch it all live at NBC Sports Live Extra every morning, and the start times are actually pretty decent. They're usually later afternoon in Europe, so that's not too early here. And then you can watch same-day coverage on Universal HD on television. So great coverage of the tour this year.
Yeah, is that something that is like available to the consumer market, doing some kind of tour to ski like that? Sounds fun.
Well, it really is. And actually, I don't know if the folks at Tuna or with the Wasatch Citizen Series, you know, might think about something like that. But it is a lot of fun. And the guy who conceived this, Georges Capal, just was brilliant in setting this up, very much like the Tour de France. And every single stage has just an enormous number of people. Snow conditions are really tough, though. So if you watch the races from Lenzerheide, there was basically just this kind of 50-foot-wide swath of snow that they raced on throughout the brown landscape. So that was a little bit disappointing. But nonetheless, it's a great event with lots of festivities, and it really has helped to put cross-country ski racing on the map.
Yeah, and what's changed? I mean, making the U.S. a bit more competitive. It used to be, of course, just the Scandinavian countries that, you know, would win after win. I mean, have we changed training, coaching? I mean, put more money into it?
It's all of those things, actually, Leslie. And to go back in the history of it, back in the late 90s, we actually started a development program here in Park City and brought a lot of the athletes to one place. So that's going back a lot of years, almost 20 years now. But that really was the start of it. And then we had some great athletes come along, people like Keegan Randall. But a lot of it is consistency in program, investing more money. There were a couple of points in the 2000s where we actually did as an organization invest more money in it, and that's made a real difference. But we've also had a great consistency in coaching and a consistency in program. And the fan community in the U.S. for cross country has done a remarkable job at galvanizing itself around the team to support it. We recently went out with a fundraising campaign to raise $700,000 for a wax truck to have in Europe to help us become more competitive. And through the cross country task force that we have, we were able to raise that money over the last 6 months. So next year we'll be able to be maybe a little bit more competitive by having a good, well-staffed wax truck on the tour like the other nations do. So it's all of those things, and it's just exciting to see that over a period of time when you've invested in different things and see them paying off with the results of the athletes, it gives you a really good feeling.
Okay, and then really just due to the holiday break, not a lot going on with ski racing, but we had the Alpine team in Italy?
Yeah, the Alpine team is going to try to regroup. A lot of cancellations and changes. Did have a few races over the holiday. The only notable result is Racy Stiegler with a top 15 again in the slalom in Lienz, which is her father's hometown and kind of a second home for her. But the races in Zagreb that were scheduled for this past weekend have been moved to Santa Caterina, Italy. Women will be racing a slalom tomorrow. Racy will be there for the USA. And then on the men's side, they have a slalom on Wednesday. David Chodansky right now having an outstanding season there. And then looking ahead to this next weekend, Adelboden, Switzerland for the men. Ted Ligety will be back in action with a giant slalom. That race had definitely problems with snow, but they have now confirmed it as of yesterday. And then the women moved from St. Anton, Austria, where they had a downhill scheduled. They're now going to Altenmarkt Zaukensee, just south of Salzburg. And they're going to be running a sprint downhill on Saturday. That's a two-run downhill. You don't see that too often, but when snow conditions dictate it, that's what you run. And then a Super G on Sunday. Those are really vitally important races for Lindsey Vonn. She's dropped out of the lead now in the overall World Cup. Lara Gut of Switzerland has a commanding margin right now. So Lindsey hoping to get back on track with a couple of wins this weekend in Altenmarkt.
Okay, so the races moved just due to low snow?
Just low snow. And, you know, it's really surprising, a place like St. Anton that's relatively high elevation and in a good ski snow zone just hasn't had the snow this year. Altenmarkt is a funky little course. We've raced there a lot with the women, but the fact that they can't run a full length downhill, they're just doing this sprint downhill, it's going to be an interesting race to watch.
Okay, Tom, we'll see you next week.
Great, thanks, Leslie.
It's Tom Kelly with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association. KPCW News Time now, 8:42. Again, we have reports of Interstate 80 eastbound backed up to Jeremy Ranch. That's due to a traffic malfunction there at Kimball Junction. No word from Summit County as to when that will be fixed, but I'm guessing that we've got some crews on it from UDOT there having a look. Again, if you can avoid the area, that's best. Maybe you can try and go around. You're going to find some traffic, but maybe not nearly as bad as what you're seeing out there on the interstate. It's 8:42. Well, the Park City Education Foundation awards more than $1 million each year in grants. Coming up next in the granting process are the teacher grants. In the studio to talk more about them, I have Park City Education Foundation Programs Officer Sarah Hutchin, along with Carrie Strandin. She's the Resort Revenue Manager at Deer Valley. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Sarah, teacher grants, just what? One of several different kind of grants that you offer?
Yes, we have three buckets of grants, our teacher grants, school grants, and our district grants. And our teacher grants were awarded in November, and we let the teachers know in December. So they are going to be all set to use their new programs starting in January.
Okay, so what's Deer Valley's role in all of this?
Leslie, Deer Valley is a huge supporter of PCEF. We love all that they do, and we're very grateful for everything that they do. And we try to support or put resources towards a few programs like teacher grants and excellent educators.
Okay, so, I mean, do you do certain programs, or you just put money towards it that in general?
Mostly just the two programs, the teacher grants mm-hmm. and excellent educators, and we have some in-kind donations mm-hmm. as well.
There are partners in the process, and we gave out about 33 grants this year, totaling about $55,000 for the teachers, and they were spread across all the schools and all the grades, and they will impact almost all the kids in the district. It's a really exciting time.
Yeah, so how many applications do you usually get from teachers?
Oh, that's a great question. We got a lot. So we probably had about 50 or 60 applications, and our process is that we sit down with the administration and the technology people in the district and make sure that everything works, and then we get together with volunteers from the community and our board, and we read all the applications, and then we talk about which ones are the most innovative and which are going to serve the students the best.
Yeah, these teacher grants are kind of serve as like pilot programs, yeah? I mean, to see how well it works in the classroom, whether or not it gets expanded district-wide or...
They really are, and it's a great way for the Park City School District to test an idea, and some of the teacher grants move up to a school grant and then to a district grant. So robotics was an example of that. It started out as some Legos at Jeremy Ranch, and then now we have a district grant where we have a robotics team at the high school and in Treasure Mountain. And so it really is a gateway into some curriculum programs.
Right. So when does the process start then for teachers? At the end of the year then?
It starts in the beginning of the year. And we start out, Carrie and I do a road show. And with our longtime co-chair, Lynn Sear and Lori West, they work with us, and we go to all the schools and we promote the process, and then we encourage teachers to apply, and the grants are due around Halloween, and then it takes us about a month to decide, and then we give them the funds for the second semester.
Okay. Well, how hard is it to apply? I mean, does it take much away from everything else teachers already have to do?
Well, I hope not, Leslie. I really focus. My part of my job is to make it easy for the teachers. So we have a pretty easy online application, and I am constantly soliciting feedback from the teachers and administrators to see how we can streamline the process. Because really, the idea is to give these programs to the students and not take away anything from the teaching. So So I don't think that it's a burden. And I think the amount of money that we're able to give, the teachers are so grateful. And I just get to be, you know, Santa Claus before Christmas. It's like amazing.
Well, tell me about some of the grants then that received funding this year.
Sure.
Last year.
One of my favorites, we had two teachers apply, one at the high school and then Susan Beesom at Trailside. And it's a 3D pen. And it was really cool because they're being used for two different programs. At the high school, these 3D pens, they can make jewelry with them. So there's a way that they can... I don't know.
It's a way that a 3D printer works. Yeah.
Yes. I'll go with that.
So it's got the material inside.
Exactly.
Somehow. Right.
It's
okay.
Really cool. And then for at Trailside, they're using them in the library, in the media center. And so they applied for 30 pens. And that's a neat situation because that's an innovative idea. So that is, it fits our criteria. But we saw it at two different schools, obviously high school and elementary. And we were able to award both of them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what were some of the other grants?
Oh, there's so many fun ones to talk about. It's really hard to decide which one to highlight. But my favorites were a lot of the STEM-based programs. One in particular that was my favorite is the Z-Space Workstation. And essentially, it's a sort of a fully immersed desktop experience. It's a STEM, it gives a computer curriculum. It's this full suite of science software, and it's basically virtual reality, and you put the goggles on, right? Mm-hmm. Is that right, Sarah? I'm trying to visualize it when we were looking at it, mm-hmm. but yeah, that one is very cool. We awarded that to Trailside.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just a certain grade there then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Fifth grade, mm-hmm. Deb Mosier. Applied for that, and another one of my favorites was a flexible classroom where a teacher applied for bean bags and for, you know, just different sorts of furniture. It wasn't a huge grant, but it really is speaking to the way that students are learning, and we're sort of seeing, you know, last year we awarded some stand-up desks, and we're seeing that, you know, students learn better sometimes laying on the floor or, you know, not sitting at a desk, which is, I appreciate because it's hard to sit at a desk. So I think it's just such a great way for the students and the teachers to have some new things in their classroom to test out.
All right. Sure. So this $55,000, I mean, does it change every year or is that about?
Well, Leslie, the last couple of years, it's been about $55,000. The generosity of our community, you know, donating money to Park City Education mm-hmm. Foundation allows us to give that amount of money. If the donations were to go way up or way down, we probably would change it. So we set that amount at the beginning of the year. But that's about how much we give out for the teacher grants. And we give out about $150,000 for the school grants and about $450,000 for the district grants.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just really like to say thank you so much to our donors and also to Deer Valley for our partnership and to everyone who helps out with this process.
And also thank you to all the teachers out there that make this happen. And thank you to Sarah at Park City Education mm-hmm. Foundation. We love all that they do.
Okay. Carrie and Sarah, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51. KPCW News Time now, 8:52, as we've been reporting, lots of traffic backed up due to a light malfunction at Kimball Junction. On the phone with me, I have Caroline Ferris, Summit County Transportation Planner. Hi, Caroline. What's going on?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for being patient. We had a light malfunction at Kimball Junction, but UDOT was quick on the scene, and the lights are working correctly now. We still have a little bit of congestion, but that's clearing smoothly. And I just ask everyone to be patient and be safe as the congestion clears out through the intersection.
Okay. Due to a power outage, or do you have any idea what happened?
You know, I haven't investigated the mm-hmm. source of the malfunction yet. We were more interested in getting lights back up.
Okay. Great. So it sounds like that's happened and things are improving as we speak.
Exactly.
Okay. Caroline, thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie. Bye-bye.
It's 8:53. Well, coming up this week, it's the Kings of Disco when the Village People make a tour stop to Park City's Egyptian Theater. On the phone with me, I have Alex Briley, the original and only military man with the Village People. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Leslie.
So explain what
Happy
I just
New
said.
A
Happy New Year to you. Explain what I just said. This is what the promoter sent along. You are the original and only military man with the Village People. What does that mean?
Well, it means that I'm the only person that has ever done that role.
Okay. So how is it that you have become the Kings of Disco? A name I think you've, you know, kind of earned and also given to yourselves on your website.
Well, thank you for that. I think mostly it's just people who have just said that they've put us as Kings of Disco. It's been a nice run for us for about 39 years now. And there have been so many other groups out there that have done this as well. But for some reason, I think longevity might have something to do with it. I don't know. But we thank them anyway.
Yeah, so disco isn't dead, huh?
No. You know, it's funny. Whenever people say that, they said, all right, go to the clubs, see all the number of people, KC and the Sunshine Band and other artists that are out there. It couldn't possibly be dead.
Okay. Well, of course, we've all had a lot of fun, and I guess it may be relative to the amount of alcohol consumed, but doing this silly moves to your hit YMCA, tell me about the genesis of that song.
Well, it's just the fact that when we were recording many years ago, the producer was walking down the street in New York with some of the members, and I believe some of the technicians, and said, what does YMCA stand for? And someone explained it to him. And probably about 15 minutes later, he came up with a melody. They went into the studio not too long after that, and the rest is history.
Right. So, and then where did the moves come along with it? I mean, did we I said, where did the moves, you know, with the, you know, the crowd coming along?
Oh, well, that, thanks to, we had done Dick Clark's American Bandstand, and we were performing on there one time. And Dick said to us, he said, guys, I'd like for you to come into the other room with me. And so we went from one studio to another. And there were the dancers and all that usually come to the shows and you know, just having fun watching whoever the artist is. And they started to do these moves. And they did. They formed with their arm YMCA. So we have the dancers on a program many years ago to thank for those moves.
Yeah. So the Village People, are you just the one hit wonder? Or are you going to be, you know, of course, playing your few hits and then what? Maybe some other disco covers as well?
Well, you know, depending upon where you go, it's either YMCA, in the Navy, Macho Man, and maybe some of the others. So we've been pretty fortunate. But YMCA seems to be stand out for a lot of people, no matter where we go. It's one of the songs, I guess, they use in exercise classes. You can hear it just about anywhere. So we're really pretty put.
Yeah, so in terms of the show at you're kind of cutting out, but in terms of the show at the Kimball, at the Egyptian Theater then, will you be doing all original music or covers as well?
We'll be doing most of our songs. We've been doing some covers also that we've done in various shows and whatever. But I think people are there to hear YMCA and Macho Man and in the Navy.
So the founders of the band reportedly took out an ad in a music trade magazine which read, Macho Types Wanted Must Dance and Have a Mustache. Is that where they found you?
Well, actually, yes. There was I had been in there with some of the other guys, and the producer was looking for specific types, like for cowboy, the biker, and the construction worker. And out of those, they chose some gentlemen, and some of them have been with us, and I was one of those people, but at the time, I didn't have a look. And one of the members suggested that I try the military. So I've been collecting costumes over the years and wearing them out on stage just about everywhere, and that's how I became the military man.
Okay. So who makes up the band today?
Today, the biker is Eric Angelone. The Native American is Felipe Rose. Our lead singer is Raymond Simpson. Our construction worker is William Whitefield. And our cowboy is Jim Newman.
Okay, you'll be performing starting Wednesday night through Sunday. Tickets start at $43, and tickets are available at parkcityshows.com. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, hopefully that people will come ready to dance. You know, we like to have a good big party there. And bringing in the new year, we're looking forward to everyone having a good time every night.
Okay.
So please come and be ready to dance.
Alex, thanks for your time this morning.
My pleasure, Leslie.
It's Alex Briley again with the Village People, again performing at the Egyptian Theater. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.